Thank you for listening to this sermon from Seven Springs Presbyterian Church. If you want to learn more about us, please find us on Facebook or visit us at sevenspringspresbyterian.com.
So like I said, we'll be going through 1 Samuel and a little bit of background. When you jump into an Old Testament book, it's kind of hard to be able to place where it is in the timeline. When you jump into the New Testament, you know roughly it's in the first century. You know either the Gospels are when Jesus walked, and then the Epistles after that, the 40s or the 60s AD, and then towards the end of the first century with Revelation. When you jump into an Old Testament book, there's spans of hundreds of years in between books sometimes, and then trying to understand where this book is placed. So at first I want to give you a little bit of an introduction of before we even open this page and understand where we find ourselves in history. So to begin, we understand that Abraham was called and a nation was to come through him, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And Jacob has a son called Joseph. And as the end of Genesis happens, Genesis closes with Joseph and his brothers being in Egypt. Then you turn the next page, you go forward about 400 years in where you meet Moses. Moses is then to rescue the brothers, the sons, daughters of Israel, the sons and daughters of Joseph and his brothers. They had been put into slavery in Egypt. The story of Exodus is the story of them being set free. They cross the Red Sea. They go in the wilderness for 40 years. And then Moses dies, and then we go to Joshua. Joshua conquers the lands, crosses over, defeats Jericho, and then conquers the land, and they inhabit the promised land. This is the culmination of the promise which is given to Abraham that he would have his own land. It takes them years to be able to inhabit it, but then they find themselves finally in this place. But then the book of Judges comes. And the book of Judges is a grim time in the course of Israel's history. Really, it is a spiral of their demise. They go from bad to worse, and finally it closes with them not being holy. And the end, the final verse in Judges is, in those days there was no king in Israel, and everyone did what was right in his own eyes. And this is where we find ourselves when we open the book of 1 Samuel. This is where we find ourselves. That not only did they have no king, but they did what was right in their own eyes. And this is disgusting, because if you look at Judges, it's hideous what the people of God did towards the end of Judges. People that were meant to be set apart from the other nations, did exactly what other nations did, if not worse. And this is the opening of 1 Samuel, a dark time in the time of Israel. In our Bibles, we have Ruth in the middle, but from the Hebrew Bible, it goes straight from Judges into Samuel. We place Ruth there because at the start of Ruth, it says, in the days of the judges, when the judges judged. So we place it there for chronological reasons, but really, Ruth was after Proverbs in the Hebrew Bible. But so you go from people wanting their own king and doing what is right in their own eyes to 1 Samuel. There's this leadership vortex. There's no king, but they're doing what is right in their own eyes. Actually, God is king, as we'll see, that God is their king, but they don't want to listen to God. And that's where we come to. But we find ourselves in the opening pages of 1 Samuel. The word of the Lord was rare in those days. 1 Samuel 3 verse 1 says that there's silence in the 400 years of slavery. There's silence 400 years before Christ. And there's silence in this time. Silence is not good. Silence is the sign of God's judgment in the Bible. And so this is where we open up. However, the sun begins to rise on the horizon, and there's a glimmer of hope, and it's to be found in the book of 1 Samuel. The story might start off, maybe if it was a movie, with a woman on the steps of the temple. who looks either intoxicated or like she has escaped from a mental health institution. And tears are running down her cheeks and she is moving her lips with no words coming out. Looks like she has not eaten for days. She looks distressed. And this is the opening chapter of Samuel with this woman. But for us, we'll backtrack and read 1 Samuel to begin. 1 Samuel, verses 1 to 20. This is the word of the Lord. There was a certain man in Ramathan Zophim of the hill country of Ephraim, whose name was Elkanah, the son of Jeroham, the son of Elihu, the son of Tohu, the son of Zuph, an Ephraite. He had two wives. The name of one was Hannah, and the name of the other Peniah. And Peniah had children, but Hannah had no children. Now this man used to go up year by year from the city to worship to a sacrifice to the Lord of hosts at Shiloh. And he had two sons, where the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, were priests of the Lord. On the day when Elkanah sacrificed, he would give portions to Peniah, his wife, and to all her sons and daughters. But to Hannah he gave a double portion, because he loved her, though the Lord had closed her womb. And her rival used to provoke her grievously, to irritate her, because the Lord had closed her womb. So it went on year by year. As often as she went up to the house of the Lord, she used to provoke her. Therefore Hannah wept and would not eat. And Elkanah, her husband, said to her, "Hannah, why do you weep and why do you not eat? And why is your heart sad? Am I not more than 10 sons?" After they had eaten and drunk in Shiloh, Hannah rose. Now Eli, the priest, was sitting on the seat beside the doorpost of the temple of the Lord. She was deeply distressed and prayed to the Lord and wept bitterly. And she vowed a vow and said, "Lord of hosts, if you will indeed look on the affliction of your servant and remember me and not forget your servant, but will give to your servant a son, and I will give him to the Lord all the days of his life, and no razor shall touch his head." So she continued praying before the Lord. Eli observed her mouth. Hannah was speaking in her heart, only her lips moved and her voice was not heard. Therefore Eli took her to be a drunken woman. And Eli said to her, "How long will you go on being drunk? Put your wine away from you." But Hannah answered, "No, my Lord, I am a woman of troubled in spirit. I have drunk neither wine nor strong drink, but I have been pouring out my soul before the Lord. Do not regard your servant as a worthless woman, for as long as I have been speaking out of my great anxiety and vexation." Then Eli answered, "Go in peace, and the Lord of Israel grant you your petition that you have made to him." And she said, "Let your servant find favor in your eyes." Then the woman went her way and ate, and her face was no longer sad. They rose early the next morning and worshipped before the Lord. And there they went back to their house at Ramah. And Elkanah knew Hannah his wife, and the Lord remembered her. And in due time Hannah conceived and bore a son. And she called his name Samuel. And she said, "I have asked for him from the Lord." This is the beginning chapters. You think that the beginning chapters would introduce Samuel, but we turn rather to his mother. His mother is the person that we get to know that is the center. But first, we need to understand her husband, about Elkanah. And Elkanah means God has possessed. And there's three things that we'll learn about Elkanah. Firstly, he was devoted to Yahweh. He led his family in worship and would travel yearly to Shiloh to offer sacrifices. He would give portions to his family. This might remind you of Job. Job would go up to the Lord and offer sacrifices on the behalf of his children and his family just in case they had sinned against the Lord. And Elkanah is one of the holy remnant in amongst this time of Judges. That Judges is a perverse time where lots of people did what was right in their own eyes, wicked things. But there were some who truly worshipped Yahweh. And Elkanah was one of those people. And so we need to understand that he was devoted to Yahweh. In amongst this dark time, there was a man who continued to worship God. That God continues to work and look after his people, his holy seed, in amongst dark times. And Elkanah was one who was devoted to Yahweh, and he also led his family in worship. What an important principle that is for us men in the room to be able to lead by example, lead by devotion as we point our families to Christ. And so this is what he did. Secondly, Elkanah was an Ephraimite, which you might think is Ephraim, the son of Joseph, the tribe by the same name. But there's another meaning that this could have. And Ephraimite is also another way of saying Bethlehem. We see this in Genesis 3:5, 16, 19, Ruth 4:11, Micah 5:2. And why is this important when we point out Bethlehem rather than the tribe of Joseph or Ephraim, the son of Joseph? It connects him to David's line through Judah. David was called an Ephraimite in 1 Samuel 17:2, and then Ruth 1:2 says the name of the man was Elimelech, and the name of his wife was Naomi, and they were Ephraimites from Bethlehem in Judah. But Levites actually lived in Bethlehem. We see this in Judges, the book prior, in Judges 17, 7 to 12, and Judges 19, 1 to 21, and also 1 Samuel 16, 2. That this then makes the line and connects the line when we think about Samuel as a priest, that a priest must be from the tribe of Levi. So, this is an important connection that we'll see unpack and unravel as we go through. The second character or the person that we meet in this story is, we actually meet his two wives, Peninnah and Hannah. We see this in verse 2. He had two wives. The name of one was Hannah and the name of the other Peninnah. Peninnah had children and Hannah had no children. Firstly, we see this contrast between these two wives. Peninnah is only mentioned 3 times, whereas Hannah is mentioned 13 times. And what we learn about Peninnah in this verse is that Peninnah had children. And Peninnah actually means pearls of coral. Proverbs 31:10 speaks of an excellent wife. Who can she find? She is more precious than jewels. Or Proverbs 20:15. That when we first introduce to Peninnah, it seems that Peninnah is the perfect wife. Peninnah is the one that you would want in this time and age. Now, during this time, one of the wife's roles was to bear children, to be able to continue their line and legacy of. You see this in the story of Abraham and Sarai, that when they wanted to continue their line. And this is what it is. So on outward appearance, it looks like she's the perfect wife. But one thing that we'll understand in the book of 1 Samuel is it's not about outward appearances. That there is a contrast that runs throughout 1 Samuel, generally putting two people against one another. You could think of Eli and Samuel. There are two people that we'll see contrasts to. Or we can see Peninnah and Hannah again, or Saul and King David. There are two contrasts that are placed together. and 1 Samuel 16:7, a verse that will come up over and over again as we look through this book. But the Lord said to Samuel, "Do not look on his appearance or on the height of his stature, because I have rejected him. For the Lord sees not as man sees. Man looks on the outward appearance, but the Lord looks on the heart." And this is very important. When we open up in this book, we see this contrast in verse 2, this contrast of Peninnah and Hannah. And Peninnah is mentioned to be a rival to Hannah, that uses the word that to provoke her grievously, to irritate her, because the Lord had closed her womb. We actually don't get her name as we continue through this. When we look to 3 verse and verses 8. But it mentions that her rival, this person, this is Peninnah, this is the one who's tormenting Hannah, again, ridiculing her for her lack of children. And I think that's an important thing to, again, realize, that the outward appearance means nothing. It just fills us up with pride. But then we get introduced to the second wife, and really the key character, the key person in this opening chapters of 1 Samuel. You would think maybe it might be Samuel's dad, but really it's Hannah that's the one that really draws our attention. And Hannah means grace. Hannah had no children. And in these times, again, we kind of have this in today. We understand a little bit more of biology, maybe. We can have more options available if someone isn't able to conceive. But I think there's still a portion where people who are unable to conceive feel a sense of shame upon themselves, feel a sense that they're unable to... maybe they have a heart and a desire to be a mother, but they're unable to conceive, and they feel a sense of shame or guilt. But I think more so in this time where in 1 Samuel is, this shame and guilt was around. Obviously, we see that when Peninnah ridicules Hannah. Now, this is not a good method. Obviously, we find in this verse that the Lord had closed her womb. What an interesting thing to consider, the Lord closing Hannah's womb. But this is a motive, something, a story that travels not just through 1 Samuel in this section, but a story that comes up time and time again. She's in good company when it comes to the Bible. In Genesis 11:30, Sarah is told the Lord has closed her womb. In Genesis 25:21, Rebecca is in the same situation. Genesis 19:31, Rachel. And even the nameless woman in Judges 13:2, Samson's mother, is in this same boat where he is unable to conceive. This barren woman motif, which flows throughout Scripture. But these devoted women still serve the Lord, even in their barrenness. And the Lord answered their prayers. But it also points forward to the one who was to come, that Elizabeth in the New Testament conceives. But more importantly, Mary. That if God is able to open the womb of these women, then God is able to have the virgin birth happen and possible. So I think it's very important that we understand this motif, that it's a story which goes through, that the Lord is sovereign over this instance that the Lord had closed her womb, and it draws her to be able to pray this prayer. But another thing we learn about Hannah is she had no children, but she was deeply depressed about this. We see in 1 Samuel 1:10 when it said she was deeply distressed and she wept bitterly. This word in Hebrew is Mara, which is similar to Naomi's name change. You might remember in Ruth 1:20 that Naomi changes her name. She says, "Don't call me Naomi, call me Mara." And she weeps bitterly. It affects her not just in a spiritual state, her soul, but it affects her physical nature as well. Not only does she weep bitterly, but she does not eat in verses 7 to 8. That this is her response. This is what is happening to Hannah. And again, the outward appearance and the inward appearance, the heart, is something that comes out throughout this passage. What does she do to this? She doesn't then go and say, well, I'm going to get vengeance on Peninnah for ridiculing her. I'm going to drive her away. I'm going to use my husband's love against her so that she might leave. She goes to the Lord in prayer. Again, what a heart of her to be able to go to the Lord, to know that the Lord is the one who comes. And we see in verse 11 that she vowed a vow. And the vow, she said, was, Lord of hosts, if you indeed look on the affliction of your servant and remember me, and not forget your servant, but will give your servant a son, I will give him to the Lord all the days of his life, and no razor shall touch his head. She goes to the Lord and she asks the Lord to look on the affliction that she has before her. Not only see my affliction, but remember me and forget not your servant. She goes to God and she begs and she vows a vow to be able to go and stand before God, knowing that God is the one who is able to open her womb. God is the one who is able to be able to help her in this affliction. And she goes before God and she says, look on the affliction. We looked at this briefly when we went through the book of Habakkuk, the same type thing that Habakkuk goes through. What are you doing about my situation? And he goes directly to the Lord and he places his lament before the God of Israel. And forget not your servant. What an important thing to be able to pray. I know you're up there, God. But please don't forget me. Please don't leave me in this. Remember me. It's not that God has forgotten and said, oh yeah, I forgot about Hannah. I forgot that I closed her womb and now, oh yeah, silly me, I forgot. It's not that he's oblivious to the situation, but her prayer and her heart goes to God. But her prayer is that, give me a child and I will give him back to you. What a interesting thing. It's not that the child is secondary almost. It's like, maybe if I just had a child, then this affliction would go away. But she vows a vow to be able to give him back. It says that no razor shall touch his head. This is the vow, the Nazarite vow, which is means Nazar, means to separate, to consecrate. And that's what happened with Judges in 13:5 when we look at Samson and Numbers verses 6. It speaks of one who is set apart, who is set apart for a special purpose. And this is her heart and her prayer for her child. And she continues to pray. And this is where we come in when we mentioned before the lady on the temple. And she prays before the Lord, and Eli, the priest, observes her mouth, because Hannah was speaking in her heart. Again, we look at the heart, and this is an important aspect of 1 Samuel that we will look at as we go through. The heart is vital, because God doesn't look at the outward appearance, He looks at the heart. And this is her prayer before the heart of God, bearing her heart to God. Her lips moved, but her voice was not heard. Therefore, Eli took her to be a drunken woman. Now, we've met Eli very briefly in verse 3, where it says, where they go to Shiloh, and the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, were the priests of the Lord, and Eli is a priest also. Now, we'll get to know a little bit more about these two sons of him, but briefly right now we meet Eli. Now, Eli is a character which is hard to be able to place, a person who is hard to be able to place. Sometimes the Bible really paints a clear picture about whether people are wicked or whether they're good. Sometimes there's people that are just not quite sure. You're not sure how to peg them. Now, Eli, in this instance, isn't able to be able to tell. A priest isn't able to be able to tell if someone is praying or if they're drunk. And I think that might be an important thing that we might need to remember, that he assumes this woman is drunk. But we don't find out a lot about Eli right now. But compare this to Hannah's heart compared to Peninnah. Peninnah has sees this rivalry, obviously, between her and Hannah. And she goes to torment, goes to bickering, goes to complaining, goes to provoking and irritating Hannah. But Hannah goes to the Lord. Again, this outward and this inward actions that we'll see throughout. But Eli says to Hannah, "How long will you go on being drunk? Put your wine away from you." But Hannah answered, "No, my Lord, I'm a woman troubled in spirit. I have drunk neither wine nor strong drink, but I have been pouring out my soul before the Lord." What a interesting phrase that is, to be able to pour your soul out before the Lord. She's stuck in this time, and year after year, they say they go up at Shiloh to be able to make an offering. Year after year, this has probably happened time after time. She's stuck in this spot, and she goes before the Lord, bearing her soul. "I have been pouring out my soul before the Lord." What a great place to pour out our souls. With easy access to social media, to people, to anything. You can pour your soul out to the wrong people at the wrong time very easily. You can hop on your phone or send an email out to all your contacts and bear your soul towards everyone. But Hannah doesn't go and proclaim it from a rooftop. She goes before God. And what a great thing that is. When we go through trials and troubles and temptations and all these places, the best spot for us to go place our cares is before the Lord, to bear our soul before the Lord, to pour our soul out before the Lord. And she says, "Do not regard your servant as a worthless woman." This is the phrase that probably maybe that was told of her. "You are worthless." I mean, you are worthless. Elkanah, her husband, responds and says, "Why do you weep? Why do you not eat?" In verse 8, "And why is your heart sad? Am I not more to you than 10 sons?" He says, "To you, you see yourself as worthless. To me, you see that a son is all that will give you worth. But don't see yourself that way." But she speaks out of her anxiety and vexation. She finds herself in a situation which is not ideal, not great. But Eli answers her, and Beelzebub says, "Go in peace, and the God of Israel grant your petition that you have made to him." Eli doesn't even ask really what her petition was. He doesn't care about what she was sad about, what she was crying over, what she was pouring her soul out to the Lord. He just says, "Go, and go in peace, and Lord Israel grant your petition." And she said to, "Let your servant find favor in your eyes." When the woman went away and ate, and her face was no longer sad. You see this twist in the story, that maybe there's a little bit of hope for Israel. You don't know much about what's going to happen. We obviously know that the Bible is a lot longer than what we find, but it seems that the book of Judges seems to be the end of the holy nation, the nation that's set apart. But now there's just one. There's one hope, one glimmer of light. She did, in fact, go in peace, like Eli had told her. She didn't have a son at that point, but she went in peace, trusting in the Lord that the Lord would provide. But also it says in verse, the God of Israel, not Yahweh. It's not Eli then pointing to Yahweh, saying Yahweh will answer your request. Again, maybe we're seeing a little bit of Eli and his heart. Again, we can't necessarily tell at this point whether Eli is a good person or a bad person, where he falls on the line, and I'm not sure we ever do. But he points them to the God of Israel, not Yahweh, the one who is able to answer. And she vowed a vow to O Yahweh of hosts. It's Hannah prays to Yahweh, but Eli says the God of Israel, not Yahweh. So, then she comes. The answer to her prayer, the Lord remembered her. In verses 19 to 20. The Lord remembered her. He remembered her prayer. They rose early the next morning and worshiped before the Lord. They went back to their house at Ramah. Elkanah knew Hannah, his wife, and the Lord remembered her. What a great aspect that here we have this one woman in Israel, one out of a nation. And the God of Israel, the God of this nation, and she comes before God. And she doesn't pray through a priest, she doesn't pray through anything. She's nothing special in the world's eyes, but the Lord listens to her. The Lord remembered her. The Lord answered her prayer and her petition. What a great thing that is for us to think and consider, that the Lord remembers us when we pray. It's not that we go before and we have our outward appearance together, but we go and ask Him, knowing that He is the one that is able to answer. It says, in due time Hannah conceived and bore a son, and she called his name Samuel. And she said, I have asked for him for the Lord. Now, when we go through the book of 1 Samuel, what I'll be doing is also pointing out what people's names mean. People's in Hebrew, in the Hebrew Bible, names mean something. It's very interesting to go through and find out what names mean, like Peniah and Hannah. The Peniah means pearls of coral, and Hannah means grace. And same it is with Samuel. And Samuel actually doesn't mean I have asked from him for the Lord. That's actually what Saul means. That's actually a better translation for Saul and Saul's name. So some scholars will go through this and just say, well, the people that edited this and compiled it, they made a mistake and therefore we can't trust the Bible. That's not, I don't think that's important. I think that he called his name Samuel because heard of God is what Samuel means. And this is one of the big themes that will come up over and over again, is heard of God. Not just answering prayers, but God speaking and us listening. This is a theme that will come up again and again. Will you hear the Word of God, but also will you obey the Word of God? We'll see this more as 1 Samuel unpacks. But I think it's important for us to, as we read this book, to think and consider those three things. The head, the king. Who is king over Israel? That's what the close of Judges says, that there was no king over Israel and everyone did what was right in their own eyes. Not only did they have no king, but they didn't listen to the king who was meant to be their king, the Lord. God was meant to be their king. God was the one who was meant to give them their law, and they were meant to listen. So instead of doing what was right in the eyes of the Lord, they did what was right in their own eyes. Because they, in fact, had a king. They were their own kings. So their head, their heart, that outward appearance, that inward heart, that's something that will come up over and over again when we meet people. We'll see whether their outward appearance is one of stamina or strength and one of valor that you want to follow or lead, or their heart. Is their heart devoted to God? And again, we see this in Peniah and Hannah. And the third thing is hearing, that we need to come before and heard of God. God hears us, but do we hear Him when He speaks? That king, who is their king? But I think the most important thing is that during this time, that God is working. God is working in this dark time 14 times it mentions that he is working. He hears the individual's cry. He is the one that hears them and is working. The Lord closed the womb. He is working throughout all of this. But from outward appearance, you wouldn't know that. You wouldn't understand that. We get 1 Samuel, so we get a glimpse of what Hannah's prayer is. We get a glimpse of her silent prayer on the temple. We get a glimpse of what's happening here, that God is actually working, that God is actually raising up someone. But in this period, it just looks like a blank slate to the people of Israel, the remnant that is left, that has seen this corrupt people be raised up, these corrupt, and we'll look later as well, that the corrupt priesthood, the people that were, not only was Israel meant to be set apart as holy, but the people who were meant to be set apart as holy in the holy nation, the priests, were corrupt. So what's worse than corrupt holy people? Corrupt people, priests that are meant to be holy. Because they're meant to be the ones leading in their holiness, that are meant to be set apart, but they're not. But the Lord is still working in this time. That's interesting as we look through the book of 1 Samuel. But what a great book it is to be able to study and to be able to understand.
Thank you for listening to this sermon from Seven Springs Presbyterian Church. If you want to learn more about us, please find us on Facebook or visit us at sevenspringspresbyterian.com. Seven Springs Presbyterian Church began in 1874 and is a congregation of the Presbyterian Church in America, located in Glade Spring, Virginia. Please join us for worship on Sunday at 10 a.m. and 6 p.m. for His glory and His gospel.